September 12th, 23, City Council meeting. Joe, you can lead.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Plocher. Okay, roll call, please.
Koch.
Here.
Trinzier.
Recording in progress.
Plocher.
Here.
Soling.
Here.
Funkhauser.
Here.
Merrick.
Here.
Terulis is absent. Cornels.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Very nice. Thank you very much. I have no amendments to the agenda. We don't have any presentations, do we? No public hearings. Any citizen comments on the agenda? This is your chance to speak to an item, any item on the agenda. Anyone? Next, we have the consent agenda with minutes from the August 22nd, 23 meeting and bills totaling $2,595,683.64. Is there a motion and a second?
Second.
Soling and Koch. Roll call, please.
Koch.
Aye.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Trinzier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yes.
Cornels.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very nice. Thank you. So next, we have the mayor's report. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Tim. Putting you on the spot. You want to give a recap? Hometown Days, you had a fantastic crowd.
Yeah, it was a great week.
Yeah, some great, great activities. And Tim, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I was at another festival last week. And we were talking with the different bands. And the person said to me, man, there's a real good band. What was the Sunday night band? Not the closing one, the one before that. Yeah, they said, oh, man, we've had Seventh Heaven at our festival. So I'm like, yeah, we've got them. We had them last week. I said, we started with some Beatles band. And they said, what was the name of that band? American English. He said, yeah, we've had them. They're real good. And I said, there's a band called 16 Candles. Weren't they there?
Saturday.
Oh, that was Saturday. What was the other one? There was another one. On...
Maggie Speaks.
Oh, Maggie Speaks. Yeah, that's right. And we talked. He said, oh, man, they're good. And I said, and we finished off High Fidelity. He said, well, whoever books your bands does a great job. So this is from another mayor, too. Actually, he was a village president. But anyway, he was very impressed.
No, it was great. So thank you to everyone.
It was a good time. So thank you all. Okay, so under the mayor's report, we have the Friends of the Fox River. It's our Fox River Day proclamation. Do I have that here to read?
Yep.
Okay. Whereas the Fox River was central to the lives of Native Americans inhabiting the Fox River Valley in Wisconsin and Illinois for millennia, providing an abundance of food and water to wildlife and those Native populations. A little sidebar here. I don't know if many of you realize this. There are actually two Fox Rivers, and they start pretty close to each other in Wisconsin. One goes north, I think it goes into Green Bay, I'm not positive, and then the other one comes south. They're both about 200 miles long, just very interesting. If you look at a map, you see the Fox River in Wisconsin, you keep going north, there's another Fox River. They both start real close to each other. I just thought it was interesting. Whereas the Fox River was essential to the lives of early settlers of the Fox River Valley, providing a source of water and power to mill the grains to feed those settlers, saw the lumber to shelter those settlers, and drive the early machinery which formed commercial industrial base that gave first growth to our community. And whereas the Fox River, once a fine fishery and source of public water, became burdened with uncontrolled discharge of industrial, commercial, municipal waste, with the resulting pollution threatening the health and welfare of the populations of the Fox River, whereas sustained and increasingly diligent and effective efforts have been made over the past century to reduce and eliminate pollution and changes to our river's natural shorelines, and whereas the Fox River has been largely freed from its burden of pollution and once again has become a safe source of recreation and reliable public water supply with fish and wildlife population and clear recovery, whereas the United States of Yorkville recognizes the historic, present, and future value of this unique and precious natural resource to our community and all other communities within and beyond the Fox River Valley, I, John Purcell, Mayor of Yorkville, do hereby proclaim the third Saturday of September this year and every year hereafter, as it's our Fox River Day, and the United City of Yorkville encourage all residents to support the Friends of the Fox River by participating, celebrating, protecting, and restoring the health of the Fox River. Thank you very much. Did any of you know the story of the fox? The fox, you know, used to, this is back in, what, the 70s? Does anyone here know about the fox from the 70s? Is that who it was? It was, okay. Yeah, and did he go up and down, and didn't he, like, plug, like, out waste and all that from factories? And
well, depends on what side of the coin you're off to listen to. He was either an eco-terrorist or a savior of the river.
It's kind of interesting, though. Yeah, it's, but the Fox River has come a long way. It's, in the 70s, it was gross. And it's, now I wouldn't eat fish out of there, but it's improved a ton. And I read, or I read, they're talking about taking out some of the dams north of Yorkville.
Yes.
Yeah, but ours would stay because it's a step and it's got the chute where the fish can get through. Yeah, so thank you. Appreciate it. So it is, it's actually, it's a very wonderful resource we have that other towns do not have. Okay, next we have our annual Constitution Week proclamation. Do we have that here? You'd think I'd have this one memorized by now, but I don't. Whereas the Constitution of the United States of America, the guardian of our liberties, embodies the principles of limited government and a republic dedicated to rule by law, and whereas September 17, 2023 marks the 235th anniversary of the framing of the Constitution of the United States by the Constitutional Convention, where it is fitting and proper to accord official recognition to the magnificent document and its memorable anniversary, whereas Public Law 915 guarantees the issue of a proclamation each year by the President of the United States, designating this week as Constitution Week, I, John Purcell, by virtue of the authority vested in me as Mayor of the United City of Yorkville, do hereby proclaim the week of September 17th through 23rd as Constitution Week and ask our citizens to reaffirm the ideals of the framers of the Constitution had in mind in 1787 by vigilantly protecting the freedoms guaranteed to us through this guardian of our liberties. Thank you very much. Next, I have a City Hall landscaping proposal. Do I have to read that? Oh,
yes.
We're looking for a motion. I thought I had to actually read this one, too. Okay, so we have a City Hall landscaping proposal in front of us. And as I think Bart mentioned the last meeting or a couple meetings ago, we would bring this forward, even though this is within our prerogative and authority. We said we wanted to bring this forward for comment, and we'd like a vote. So I'm looking for a motion to approve the City Hall landscaping contract with Max's Greener Places, Inc., that's incorporated, as an amount not to exceed $4,000 for landscape design and an amount not to exceed $20,000 for native plants.
So moved.
Mr. Second. Merrick, second by Soling. Discussion? Mr. Funkhauser?
I do have some comments and questions. I looked through this, and some of my questions and concerns are about plant selections. Now, I know this is a native plant palette, which is intended to blend in with what's out there already and kind of the style that we've chosen for this one. But as I look at the plan, some of the selection locations are really not that conducive to our parking, our, you know, for our vehicles, the areas that they're being put in, they're very tight. So with that, just I have concerns over what's being presented just as it is. Now, I recommend maybe we could either table this, or, you know, if we're comfortable moving forward with potential changes, I could chat with Mark about this one here, just to kind of work through some things, because I'm not sure if staff's aware of how much of the maintenance with some of these trees and some of these other plants are going to create, you know, like fir oaks being adjacent to some of our squad cars or other vehicles. There's a lot of material that drops off of those types of plants. Maintenance-wise, it's a lot of cleanup. They're dropping on vehicles. Do we really want those kind of plants? I get it. They're native. They're great. But the right plants in the right place is key. So those are the kind of things I want to look through, talk through with our site fencing, those kind of things. There's some concerns that I have over how it's laid out. And also, this is just the foundation plantings of the building. I know we did a little bit of cleanup around some of the other areas, but I wouldn't mind expanding the landscape to some of those other areas, the swales and some of the other islands that we have throughout our property. So, that, you know, the other part is the 20,000. I wouldn't want us to be specifically just limited to that. If we can get a better design, if it goes a little more than that, I want us to be a little flexible on that number. So,
Eric, any?
No, I don't think there's any problems with any of what Alderman Pumphelter is asking for. I think that placement can be moved without a problem, and species selection can only be varied right up until the day we buy the plants. We were looking to come now so we could buy the plants and get them planted by like the 25th and 26th of September. That was our target date.
Other comments? Well, if you want to feed some comments to Bart, that'd be fine, and then...
Yeah, as long as we're comfortable doing that, I wouldn't...
Sure.
I wouldn't need to have this table for anything for that. Work through it.
Good. Any other comments?
Now, let me add, so the $20,000, if...
Do you want to increase that amount? I don't know. Can we increase? We can't increase the amount, can we?
That's what I was just going to say. Obviously, your threshold is $25,000. So,
I mean, you can by motion. It wouldn't be specific to the plants. You know, I guess I would say if we're amenable to moving this forward, let's do it and get it done on the planting timeline that Eric had suggested, and then we can bring you back another plan for the broader area. You know, whenever we get a proposal.
You can do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Any other comments? Questions? Roll call, please.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. And Bart, reach out to Seaver, too. I think he may have some comments.
Understood.
Thank you. Okay, next, we're to the EDC committee report. It had a nice rhyme to it. Mr. Plocher?
A motion to approve an ordinance amending the Yorkville City Code, Title 10, Chapter 19, Section 10-19-9, solar farm building permit fees, and authorize the mayor and city clerk to execute.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Funkhauser? Who wants to take this? Bart, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. There is a memo in the packet that outlines our justification for the fees. The Economic Development Committee did review it, was supportive of it, moved it forward. You know, this is really brought on by the post-meeting discussion from the Bristol Ridge Solar Farm just on, you know, what does, you know, the impact of these plans and properties have on our staff. So we brought Pete Rados into a broader discussion about that, who had given us some information related to the number of inspections that he spent on the Kendall County Solar Farm. So we made some, general calculations on number of permits, the cost of doing those permits, whether they're in-house or outsourced, and then came up with the fee that's in there. So at the bottom of the City Council memo from me, I do have example building permit fees for the Kendall County one, which is already in place, obviously, so this wouldn't apply. New Leaf Solar, which has been approved by the city, but has not pulled a building permit yet. And then the two Bristol Ridge solar farms that were most recently discussed a few weeks ago, and then they're up for discussion again tonight. So, you know, it does result in tens of thousands of dollars in building permit fees, depending on the size of the solar farm. But that is the amount of effort and time that our staff or consultants will put in, to properly inspect the farms to make sure that they're safe for everybody around. So the proposal is to do that, to change the fee to $7 per panel or $7,000 per 1,000, rounding that off. And we ask for your approval for the change.
Comments, questions?
So the second one, are they grandfathered in because they were approved already before this?
So Kathy and I have to talk about that to see if it applies. I know in the past when we've changed building permit fees mid, not project, but halfway through like this, it has applied to a development that doesn't have a fee lock. Whether that makes their property and project not viable is a different story. So we would have to go back to them and say, this is what, the fee is now. And if there's any changes, they'll have to come back in front of City Council at some point to ask for either forgiveness or, some sort of plan change.
Other questions? Did I see another hand over? No? Roll call, please.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Aye.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Koch?
Aye.
Plocher?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you all. Anything else from EDC?
No.
Awesome. Public safety?
No report.
Admin committee?
No report.
Park board?
Just a couple items, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to let the council know we did receive the Countryside Playground equipment Friday's hometown day, so we're hoping to start installing playground equipment over the next month and a half. Have it done end of October. It's not a city event, but there's a Salute with Smoke Festival up at Raymond Lake Water Park this weekend, and people would like to attend. Just want to remind everyone that Education Foundation is doing their annual story walk event at Junior Women's Harlan Circle Park next Wednesday, September 20th, from 4:30 to 6:30. They'll be putting a new story into the story walk. If anyone's interested in submitting a scarecrow for the scarecrow walk, they're due by Monday, September 25th. And lastly, your Oktoberfest is the last weekend of September. The Kiwanis event is at River Front Park, September 29th and September 30th.
Excellent. Thank you, Tim.
Public Works, no report.
That's fine. Did I skip over something?
It's on a bird case.
Oh, I'm like, I knew there was one missing. I know I'm missing one. I'm missing Coke. Well, you didn't answer a phone call, so I figured I could skip you. And Tim, the veterans thing this weekend, they've got a carnival and everything going on, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're not going to have a windstorm this year. It doesn't look that way. Yeah, last year, God, I felt bad for them. But yeah, it looks like the weather's going to be gorgeous. Okay, Mr. Koch, did you have anything else you want to add? Okay, thank you. I accept my apologies. Is Christy zooming in?
She is. She's online.
Oh, hi, Christy.
I'm here.
I can't see on my screen here, but I can see it on the big screen. Do you have anything to report from planning and zoning?
Only that tomorrow night is the UDO public hearing, and that we encourage people to come out and take a look at the plan.
Thank you. City Council report? Community? Oh, nope. God, I'm trying to skip something else. City Clerk report?
No report.
Okay, thank you. Community and liaison report.
Just one real brief about the CVB. So the state has finally appointed a deputy director of tourism for the state. This has been an open position for several years. There was an acting person in that position. So the new director has been put in place. Kind of doing a tour around the state, and the CVB was picked as one of the locations as a stopping point on the tour, on his tour throughout. So the 27th from 5:30 to 8:30, there's kind of a round table meet and greet, you know, with the director to talk about some of the highlights of the state and our territory, our region for the CVB. So it's kind of a nice deal to have the new director coming out our direction and talking to us. Being able to have that point of contact is rather nice. So just wanted to throw that out there. It's kind of a testament to what all the AACDB does have, that we're one of the largest and most prominent, so we're getting a tour stop.
That's awesome. And thank you for attending those meetings.
They're fun.
How's the library board?
What's that?
How's the library board?
I don't know. Did they approve that panel last night, or did they...
They didn't have to approve it.
Oh, okay.
But they did review our, we gave them a building capital improvement memo, all the updates on different pieces of equipment that we've been working on. As far as I know, they reviewed it and are prepared to move forward with chiller replacements. So
they're making progress. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
You just, you know, make a few changes over there and things get, they improve. In fact, now that you bring up the library, I want to tell you something. While I was at practice, I was talking to a person who works with the school district, and they said they took some students over to the library, and the library was just very friendly, very receptive, and they said, if you want to bring the students back, we can work with them on other stuff anytime. And this person from the school district was just shocked, said, we've never had such good relationship with the library before. So, really improving. So there's your report. That might be the only report for a few months. But yes?
One more thing I want to put in here on the CVB. So Raging Waves hosted our monthly meeting this past month.
Oh, did they really?
Which Don and Randy were fantastic. They gave us a behind-the-scenes tour of some of the things that most people wouldn't see.
Was it in the Lazy River?
It was the pumps and mechanisms.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Randy was so excited to show. And one thing after we were done with our board meeting and the tour, they had one of the groups, this was the museum group, so they have subgroups of the organization. They were meeting out there to go through, walk through. I actually tagged along for that one, and it was really cool to see this and to get Randy's background history on what got him into doing this was fantastic. I've always known they're great people, but it was really nice of them to, open up the facility, host us, and, just take us through and do that. So it's just kind of a testament to them as being part of our community.
They definitely are. Well, again, they're hosting this weekend. They're hosting.
Exactly.
So yeah.
They're always engaged in something.
No, it's fantastic. So thank you. Okay. So now we're to the mayor's report continued. Or did I miss anything else? No? Okay. The first thing I have is Yorkville Chamber of Commerce golf outing. This Thursday. That's Black Bear, right?
It is.
Yeah. So if any of you are out in the area, come say hi to the chamber. They always love to see us come by. And I might give you a ride on a cart. So, and I might not. Depends how nice you are. Okay, next we have the Bristol Ridge Solar Farms. We have an update and discussion. Again, discussion only, no vote tonight. After the meeting where we didn't take any action on this, I heard several concerns, questions, just maybe lack of information was communicated. And the petitioner said they would like to pursue this and proceed. I said, well, we probably should have a discussion about this and get questions answered. Bart, anything you want to add?
Scott Osborne, developer's representative, is here tonight. He did ask that we could show the site plan up on one of the screens.
Oh, okay.
Drop down here, that way you can reference it.
Sweet.
There is an informational memo that was distributed to the aldermen yesterday and then was posted online as a supplemental packet for the public at the same time that just goes over a number of the issues related to distance from solar panel to the neighbors, some of their community initiatives, and some of the drainage concerns and other resident concerns that have been brought up. So I guess I would turn it over to Scott, if that's
okay.
That's
fine.
Great.
So the screen's going to come down?
Yep.
I don't remember if I have to move or not.
Hey, JJ, can you make sure the mic's on? There should be. It's just a switch. Flip on.
That's pretty good. Call him JJ. I'm waiting for you to call him John.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
And Mr. Olson, thank you. My name is Scott Osborne. I'm the director of project development with Turning Point Energy. We're the developers proposing this Bristol Ridge solar projects. We're calling them TPE ILKU-105 and ILKU-106. That's the name that was picked by the GIS system. So that's how we got to the name, but Bristol Ridge Solar is fine. There was some confusion, I think, in the last meeting, and I hope you all got my memo from Mr. Olson or Mayor Purcell yesterday, trying to address some of the questions that I know were unanswered. We voted tonight on the building permit fee of $7 a panel. Our projects, each one of these projects is going to have about 15,000 panels. So you do that math, that's just over $100,000 per project in fees. We're fine with that, and I personally believe that the city should have those fees because the citizens of Yorkville should not be picking up the tab for inspections on these kinds of projects. That should be on us, and I think that's the right thing to do. So I asked all my colleagues about that, and they seem to be on the same page as I am on that, and I think that is an appropriate building permit fee for these kinds of projects. Not that my opinion really matters, but I think it was the right move. The projects have had questions about different things. Drainage came up in one of our initial planning committee hearing. Some of the neighbors were concerned about drainage. They already have drainage problems. And I don't know which way to, which side I want to point. I'm trying to point at anybody.
Yep.
This project has a ponding occurrence here. There's a drain tile that runs under it, and that drain tile should evacuate that water. But if it does, that drain tile goes under the substation, under this industrial commercial property, and into the homes that are just south of there. So if we solve that drain tile problem, we're creating a bigger problem for some of our neighbors. I don't think that's not the right thing to do. The civil engineers, I've asked about it, they said, well, the quarry doesn't absorb very much water, so we're going to plant these native grasses and these native flowers, and it's going to have deeper roots, and that'll absorb more water. Well, that might be an answer, but that's not really a solution if other folks still have drainage off issues off to the west. So I was thinking about this last night, and we're going to have to do stormwater management practices and get a stormwater permit. If we oversize the stormwater detention areas where they will hold more water, maybe that solves our neighbor's problem. At the very least, and we're not exacerbating the problem. So that's a big concern for me. Visibility is not a big, always a big concern for projects like this. And in my letter from yesterday, that you would have had yesterday, we discussed possibly, not possibly, we're willing to commit to doing a 8-foot wooden privacy fence along the west side of the project areas. That way, the visibility is completely, that should completely cover the visibility. And that's what they did over by the county courthouse for the solar project that's over there. I think that's probably a good solution. We're still gonna have our plantings and the evergreen trees and the deciduous bushes for the vegetative screening. But that fence will certainly eliminate any visibility concerns that neighbors would have.
Are those plantings going to be outside of the fence?
They will be outside.
So you have the fence, and then outside of that, you'd have landscaping.
Right.
Okay. And then so, the other thing I want, and I'm looking at this one over here, it's hard for me to see. Where is the first line of solar panels going to be? Not the actual property, but the solar panels.
Right there, isn't it? Just east of the pond?
Yep, right there.
Okay, and where is the substation now?
The existing substation is straight south, right there by the tracks.
And to the little west of the substation, there's a little building there. Is that part of the substation?
That's all part of the ComEd substation.
So people are looking at that now, 8 months out of the year, when the corn's not tall.
The corn's
or
not
7 months,
tall.
Whatever.
So the corn's not tall. They're looking at that, and there's a high voltage power lines that come through there too, and there's a railroad. So there are other things that are there, but that's not.
Okay.
We don't want to erode the perception of anybody's property based on the things that are there.
Okay, but that's where the closest panels would be. Outside of that, there'd be a fence, and outside of the fence, there would be landscaping.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a perspective.
Okay. Yep. So the privacy fence, I think that's a good solution. And the distances that are there, we're already, I measured it, it's about 890 feet from the project area fence to the back of the parking lot for Bristol Tap. And that means it's about a little over 1,000 feet to the homes that are there south of the chapel. So I think we're well set back from those neighbors. To the north of this project is the Velasquez, Roberto Velasquez has his home here. And I think they run some mulching out here from time to time, and other aspects of his landscape business. I've met with him a few times. He seems to be okay with it. He wasn't happy initially, but he seems to be okay with us moving forward on this. And if we need to extend a privacy fence to help shield his home for visibility of this, that we're happy to do that. This is one of two projects. So this is the southern project area. We have a project that's north of here on the property that's north of the Velasquez home. These are not a package deal. This one has the church as a neighbor, the YMCA has property behind the church. This is farmland to the east, and the same landowner has the parcel that is between these two private areas. And he signed up for this, so he's happy anyway, and then there's Mr. Velasquez. So they're not a package deal. We can separate them and approve one or the other. I'd love to do both, but if we can't do both, the northern project, I think, it doesn't have direct residential neighbors except for Mr. Velasquez. So it's a not a better or worse option. It's a less, it has impact on fewer people, I think. And this too can have, and we have designed it for the wooden fence also to provide that visual screening, also the landscaping on the west side of the project. Other questions?
Brad, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Regarding the drainage. So with any development, not just this development, how does our ordinance handle water runoff from any site that's developed?
Yeah, any new developments within the community has to follow the current stormwater ordinance. So that spells out exactly what is required from developing the sites, whether or not detention is required, if detention is required, exactly what the release rate is, and all those design parameters. So as Mr. Osborne noted, he does have to go through the permitting process. Quite a bit of detail needs to be provided to our office, and we would review it against the ordinance and make sure it complies. But basically, at the end of the day, you don't want to make development cause any downstream damage or upstream damage. So that's what we're going to be looking at. We'll look at upstream issues or any concerns, look at the site as it is, and how it's going to be developed, making sure it's not creating additional stormwater issues downstream. We also look at the downstream issues as well to make sure that it's going to handle any additional flow that may come off the site. So some things were referenced. Those things will be evaluated as part of the typical review process.
So with this project or any other project, water would not run off the property faster than it currently does?
Correct.
So it would be the same rate or possibly slower than it currently runs off?
Correct.
Okay. And then, Christy, I can't see you, but you're out there somewhere, right? Is that correct?
I'm here.
Okay. Christy,
I'm here.
A question that's been raised has been the decommissioning and the bonding for that. Can you explain how that works, please?
Sure. So the decommissioning cost means basically it's the reasonable cost and the expense incurred to remove the structures from the site and stabilize the site back to its original use. So the petitioner came up with a timeline of decommissioning and individualized costs to remove each panel, to restore the site, and the city reviewed it to make sure it was at a sufficient amount. And with that, we required, because the lease is about 25 years, we required a 3% inflation rate, because the cost that they generate is the cost as a present value. So we want to make sure in the future that we are covered in regards to the escalation of costs to do the same work later. Also, the city requires bonding of that amount plus 20%. So 120% of that amount, we require bonding so that we can make sure that if the city has to do the work, that it covers our costs to do that.
So if I remember this or understand this correctly, we take the current estimated cost, inflate
Correct.
That by 3% per year for 25 years, come up with a future value.
Correct.
You come up with that future value, and then you increase that future value by 20% And that's what they're required to bond?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not 20% of today's value, it's 20% of the future value that it's increased by?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So for one of the sites, I believe the total decommission estimate was about $625,000. Once we do our security guarantee of 120%, we're at $750,000.
Ken, did you have a question on that?
Yeah, this is the first I've ever heard what the original amount is.
So the original amount, we're estimating somewhere around $300,000 for each. So okay. Taking 3% inflation
and then 3%,
20% on top of that. It ends up being, this is off-the-cuff calculation, it ends up being like $680,000 for one of them and $600,000 for the other part. So they would have to post two bonds for, you know, $600,000+.
And then that's 3% on top of that for inflation?
Nope.
That's the end number?
So if they constructed it today and then tore it down tomorrow, we estimate that would cost, I'm going to say, right around $300,000 for each site. So for one of the sites, we're taking $300,000, we're multiplying it by 3% 25 times, and then we're adding 20% on top of that at the end of the 25. So that's how you get to $688,000 for one of them, up from like $328,000 for current costs. Do you understand?
Any other questions on that part? And we have other stuff, but I just want to make sure. Because that came up a couple times. Scott, what else? Do you have anything else?
No. If there are questions, I'm happy to answer questions. If y'all need to reach me, I think my contact information is in that memo. So reach out to me anytime. I'll put your phone. I think I got an email from you this morning. Thank you.
Bless you.
But please ask me that. If you have questions, ask me, and I would do my best to answer them if I don't know.
Ken, did you have a question?
Yeah, I got one, so.
Go right ahead.
So, to start off with the first thing, the tax revenue numbers, if it was just remaining farming, was there an increase in this tax number, or is that the same? The 34,775?
There is an increase. The present revenue off of one of these sites, I'm not sure which one of these parcels it is, about $2,100 a year. That's their entire tax bill. So for Yorkville, just for the city, it's $120 a year.
And that 34 number is 25 years out?
34,775.
I'm assuming that's at 20, 25 years?
Right.
Income. Okay, that's what I kind of
thought. No, that's in here. Okay.
All right, just wanted to know that.
34,775, that's the total of 20 years of that tax revenue.
Okay. I want to go into the power savings. I think I asked this question in the very last EDC that I was on, and I don't know. You're saying that there is going to be a benefit to us, and I was told there, I don't believe there was going to be a benefit to the residents.
This falls into a community solar program under ComEd that local customers can sign up for. And there is a discount to be had for those local customers. I don't know what those numbers are that's run through ComEd, but all the data that I found online, it wants me to sign up, and I can't sign up because my address is in Colorado. So they won't let me sign up. I can't give a precise number as to what that savings looks like.
So wouldn't everybody in the city want to sign up for this? If you're talking about there would never be a discount. That's how I'm understanding this.
Theoretically, that's the first that I've heard. Usually it ends up being a surcharge.
But I asked about a surcharge.
It's been a couple of years since I've looked into it. So I would have to comment.
Where I live in Colorado, there is a green pricing program under the utility company that's called Wind Source. And you would pay a little premium on your bill and you get 100 kilowatt hour block, I think, out of the wind projects in Colorado. When natural gas is really expensive as it is now, that's a savings because it's offsetting your natural gas consumption on your electricity side. How exactly that program will work through ComEd, nobody's been able to explain it to me in a way that
I... Is it a choice or is it mandatory to sign up for the program?
You would have to sign up for it in order to
Oh, so it's a person's choice.
Yeah. But most taxpayers, would, I'm assuming they would sign up for it.
Right.
Right. I mean, why would you?
I know, I have people saying like solar, so.
I've been told that there's limited enrollment, that they will take only so many customers per project, and they try to make those locations, the neighbors closest have first dibs, but I don't know how they learn that. I wish I did.
Okay. You know, look, back up just 1 second. Ken, your previous question regarding the property taxes.
Yeah.
Scott, you did a calculation. Yes. For the schools, it's about what, an extra $55,000 a year for the first year?
For the school district, I had. Now this is an estimate, but it's following the state's process, and the mill levies can change. So I came up with $29,584 per site.
So about $59,000.
Yeah.
And just so everyone knows, I call the assessor's office because I don't know where he's come up with this number. And there's a state formula that calculates this, and it's based on the number of panels and different things. But it's a state set rate, and I went through the calculation with a person from the assessor's office, and they came up with very similar numbers. So the numbers he gives are definitely in the ballpark.
Yeah, 25-year. These numbers are 25-year numbers, though.
Well,
yeah, that's what he just told.
The number of $55,000 per year. Yeah, but there's a depreciation, but then there's an inflator. Again, with the state, it's not real simple, but you can calculate what the first year will be pretty close. But yeah, so it's going to be, right now they're getting, would you say, $7,000 for the whole properties? How much was
it? It's closer to $4,000.
$4,000.
Your total tax bill for the two parcels is closer to $4,000.
And now they're getting close to $60,000. So,
right.
Whether you're for it or not, there is a benefit to the schools that puts no students in the school district. So, Ken, go ahead. I know you have other questions.
And looking through here, some of this community engagement investment and community-oriented design. Well, I think the design stuff we covered previously, and that seems straightforward. So this investment stuff seems kind of vague. I mean, there's just some numbers there, and I don't see details with it. I just
hear
about that.
The company owner has said he wants to give so much money per year, but he has a number in his head that he wants to hit, and he has told us that on these projects we're going to find organizations in the locality, in the municipality or the county or elsewhere in the vicinity that are doing good work and need our help. And he said, we're going to give $20,000 per project to that charity or charities. If it's the library and the education programs that were discussed earlier, we'd love to support programs like that, where the students can make better use of the library services. Other programs that have come up, they gave me a spreadsheet of all the things they donated to. There's a lot of food banks and Habitat for Humanity and churches, and but the insurance probably goes back to a food bank or a homeless shelter and mental health, all kinds of different programs they've been to over the years.
Anything else, Ken? Okay. Other questions? Chris, Craig, you both look like you want to say something, but I can't go. Or if you're just getting hungry and you look at that pretzel. They're pretty good. Anyone?
No one else is going to go. So a couple questions. So the tax revenue, I'm trying to understand this. There's the word each of the two projects. So I'm trying to figure out if what's noted in here for the $34,000, the $430,000, and the $16,000, is that double or is that in aggregate? I'm a little confused by the language and how this has been discussed so far.
Make sure I didn't mess something up here. Yes. Over 20 years, I have different notes here. So over 20 years, each project would pay to the school district approximately $430,000.
So 860 over the 20-year term.
For the two projects, 860.
And then the other would be approximately 70 for the the city and the $32,000 to the library.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure that that was correct and how I was reading that number.
Yes.
So, okay. So, obviously, with the contribution like that to the school district over time, it's not huge in terms of what it brings in every year, especially once you get down to the library and the city. It is tax revenue. It is, you know, for the school district, zero students, so that's an incentive to them. But, you know, if it developed residential, if it were, say, age restricted, you're still receiving tax benefit, but you're not receiving students. So that's what I'm looking at with the tax revenue is, yes, there is a revenue stream coming in of, you know, $800,000, you know, $962,000 actually is what it looks like based on your projections over the 20-year term, which is good. Now, if it were to go to a residential based on what was approved underneath it, you know, the annexation that was done, quick calculation shows that the actual, just talking about school district, Yorkville Library, $25 million over that same term without an escalator of tax increases. So, granted, there's a lot more cost associated to the school district. City has obligations with our roads and everything. So it's not that it's a windfall of money because there's a lot of obligation that goes along with it. So if you look at the alternative of residential, there's a lot more tax revenue, but there's also cost to that. So I want to just kind of put that out there, that's where we lie in terms of comparison. I am glad to see the power savings to residents. I've noticed lately we've had a lot of solicitors, hawkers coming through trying to sell you on solar incentives and discounts.
Or a new roof.
Yeah, the roof ones, I did actually listen to one of the spiels on the tax rebate, the things that they have for the solar. I think it was about $1.85 that it would have been a savings monthly for a bill like mine. And it was right, it's a first come, first served basis, but that's all that I got out of that conversation. So the program exists, but it's very limited. So I still have some concerns about this. The fencing, it's good that they're willing to do a solid fence. I would think that maybe we do need to expand that fencing a little bit further. I still have questions on drainage, but it sounds like from conversation I had with Brad, some of that could be alleviated. With the site plan, you still show with those setback areas in the front?
Yes.
Is that going to be farmed? I think you had mentioned that it is potentially going to be farmed. What is the use in front of the buffering and the fencing?
I would like to make it available for farming. I'm not sure the landowner is going to, where he's going to come out on that. It might not make sense for a farmer to haul all of his gear down to farm this somewhat limited acreage.
That was my concern.
Yeah.
So what happens to that property?
If it is not farmed, it would be planted in native grass seeds, the typical pollinator mix that we'll use, and it will then have to be mowed and maintained, which is going to happen for the rest of the project area anyway. So that will be rolled into our overall operations and maintenance plan.
That's a good clarification because that one was still unclear at the last committee meeting that we had regarding this one. So that gives me a little more comfort that there is something going to go in there. So it's not just a unkempt field in the front, you know, because the one is, you know, 800 feet on the setback. That's a lot of distance.
It can't be left open. If it was just left open and unmaintained, there would be weeds or somebody would dump a bunch of garbage out there or something. We all know how it is when things are left alone like that. So, yes, it would have to be maintained. And in the event that somebody were to dump stuff out there, all the neighbors will have our contact information and we'll get our means to people out there to clean it up immediately.
And you're still, so you have the 8-foot wood fence alternative on the front side, the west side of the properties. Northeast and south of the properties is 8-foot, but you're still calling it agricultural fencing, or have you come off of that and changed the style of fence?
Perimeters? We were advised to change that to chain link because the ag style fence, which is kind of a wire mesh, like a 4-inch or 5-inch grid. That could be climbed, and it likely wouldn't support much weight. So the chain link looks like it's a more safe solution and better security.
I appreciate the clarifications on those. That's something that had questions, didn't get quite the answers I was really looking for at the last committee meeting. Mm-hmm. I still have some reservations over this. Kind of like I said with the plants, right place, right plant, right place, right use. This location, it is adjacent, but it's also somewhat removed from a lot of intensity. But there's also growth opportunity in this corridor. I know this was 17 years ago when this site was approved for residential. Nothing has happened, obviously. But now we're seeing the other developments that were approved in that same corridor come active. Bristol Bay is going to get built out in a few years, several years. There's not much other that's been approved with entitlement out there. So anything that has interest for residential is going to come along this corridor in the next few years, because we've seen a lot of trends of interest in our region. So one of the problems with solar is, and I've seen this, people don't like to live next to it. So if we approve it and we put it in, one of the concerns would be, are we going to stifle development in this corridor? And it's all perception based. There are benefits to solar, no doubt about it. So it's a perception living next to it. So with that, if we stifle our own development in this corridor, is that going to be a hindrance to us? Does Montgomery then benefit, since they have open land adjacent that's able to be developed? So I want to be cognizant of that. You made a comment that your northern site would be more beneficial potentially if it was separated from the two of them together. I'd actually go the opposite direction. I prefer it if it were separate. Do the one adjacent to the tracks, keep the north one available for development opportunities.
Just to back that up, Chris, I did a lot of research on this, and when they pinpoint where they want to put a solar farm, their very first thing is they want to be like within 1,000 feet either of a ComEd tower or a ComEd power station. So the south part would be their first choice, like you're saying.
I don't know if it's the same size. I think it's a little smaller, but it's just a little more out of sight, out of mind. As I was looking through some of the Google Earth street views and taking a drive around here, it was mentioned that you would see the transformer site that's existing out there. You don't see the transformer site with what's existing out there today. With the corn, the way that this site's a little bit lower, you don't see that transformer system. So knowing that there's a 10-foot tall building back there, if you're going to do a 8-foot fence and those I don't remember the ultimate height of the panels, your visibility is going to be very limited on this site because it's set so far back. The other site, you do have a much more clear view because it's actually slightly higher in its elevation. So I would say the southern one, I would lean more towards something of that as compared to both of them. I really don't think that the north one is as conducive just with the potential up in this area. So.
Other questions or comments? No one else? It looks like you want to say something. I can't tell.
No.
Oh. Okay. Thank you. Anything else you want to offer?
Not that I can think of. Right now, the landowner is he's a real estate developer and construction guy. And he's been sitting on this land for, gosh, I think he bought it in 2009. So he's been sitting on it for a while, and nothing's come up yet. But that residential development, it may come along. When I talked to their guy last week, he said that they're not seeing anything in the near term. They haven't had any offers lately. And I think they're just worried. I think builders might be worried about the macroeconomics of interest rates today and being able to actually move their residential units. So, whichever way it goes, it'd be interesting to see what happens with the property.
So, okay. Unless there's any other questions, we appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thank you. Thanks for that. I think that helped answer some questions. Okay. That was item 4. Bart, anything on the buildings or the water?
Nothing further.
Okay. Is there any additional business? Any citizen comments? Good evening.
Hi, I'm Molly. I just wanted to say I'm surprised you guys didn't bring it up. Last night something kind of historic took place at the library and we were able to be there. The whole board was sworn in, which hasn't happened for a very long time. It turns out that no trustee ever took an oath to uphold the constitutions in the 4 years that you've been mayor, Mr. Purcell. And then I did a little bit more digging and found out that nobody on the library board has sworn an oath, or we have no record of an oath sworn in the 58 years that the city has been in charge of the library. So it was nice to be there to talk about what it means to take an oath before God, serve the people, and the need to stand up to liberal consultants and Marxist associations that are trying to move their agenda into the library. And these boards are the people's line of defense against this stuff. So good, the library is moving in a good direction. So I thought that was pretty exciting. All of you guys have Illinois Constitution, and as you read through that, I just wanted to point out a couple things that would be pertinent to serving on this board. It's just really 9 pages that would be really significant for you guys. It's large font, it's small pages, it's a really easy read. Page number 4 is the preamble, and the preamble states the purpose for the state of Illinois and kind of sets up the rest of the document. And it says that Illinois was formed for the purposes of seeking God's blessings. So that's something that we really need to keep in mind when we're making policy and ordinances. And then Article 1, it has a total of 24 sections. That's the Bill of Rights. And that's these are really important for knowing where the line needs to be drawn when we're designing ordinances and policy for the city. For the people. These things cannot be infringed upon. And I just wanted to make a few comments. I think a couple of you have heard this already, and I apologize, but I just wanted to make a few comments about the newly proposed yard sign regulations that will be coming out of committee soon. I'm specifically referring to restrictions for yard signs on private property, restrictions which actually fall outside of the authority granted to this council. The keywords here are private and public. It's true that this council has been granted some constitutional authority to regulate public property. However, there are no provisions in our constitutions that grant the authority to regulate private rights or property. So if you want to write codes for signs on public property, you have been granted the authority to do so. But going beyond the authority which you have been given is an unreasonable and or arbitrary use of power, which is literally the definition of tyranny. A few weeks ago, in the UTO committee meeting, the consultant explained, the consultant who is out of Chicago, Portland, and LA, which that's kind of something we got to keep in mind when we're bringing in people to help us out with this stuff. This is Yorkville, and we're bringing in people out of Portland, LA, and Chicago. She explained that because murals are art, which actually translates into them being expression, which is protected by our constitutions, murals cannot be regulated. Additionally, the people also have a right to the security of their own private property, which per our constitutions is not subject to regulation like some of the public property. The men who founded America knew what it was like to live under an oppressive monarch. As a result, they intentionally formed America as a constitutional republic where the power originates from and remains with the people. The only higher authority was Jesus. This truth was memorialized by the popular Revolutionary War response, "We have no king but Jesus," whenever King George, tried to force mandates on colonists. These men understood their God-given authority to live as free people. Within America's constitutional republic, public servants are selected by the people to uphold the constitutions of the land, and that's what all of you guys have, and the library board has now sworn to uphold these constitutions. Elected representatives are servants of the people, granted the power to pass only those laws necessary for carrying out the limited powers specifically granted to them by the constitutions of the land, while upholding the rights of the people. And I'm going to say that again, because this is kind of key. Elected representatives are servants of the people, granted the power to pass only those laws necessary for carrying out the limited powers specifically granted to them by the constitutions of the land, while upholding the rights of the people. Furthermore, the rights of the people listed in the Constitution are not the end of the rights of the people. Those are simply the enumerated ones. Article 1, Section 24, that's in the Bill of Rights of the Illinois Constitution, says that, quote, "The enumeration in this Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the individual citizens," end quote. So what does that mean? It means that the people have reserved or retained any and all power that has not been specifically granted to government. America was established to operate within a limited form of government that must function within the narrow boundaries established by the people. If a power has not been given to the government by the people, then the government doesn't have that power. While Article 7, Section 7 of the Illinois Constitution does grant city legislatures the power to do six specific things, they must figure out how to do those six things without trespassing any of the rights of the people, whether the enumerated rights in Article 1 of this Constitution or any other rights retained by the people as discussed in Article 1, Section 24. We all must know these documents in order to responsibly be the people and faithfully serve the people as aldermen. You, not the lawyers, took the oath to uphold these constitutions. And if you trespass the rights of the people, it is not the lawyers, but you who will be held responsible. It's really not hard to read and apply these documents. They were written by the people, regular people, to be executed by regular people for the benefit of regular people. You'll see how easy the language is when you read it. So my point here, as it applies to this specific meeting and the proposed ordinances that are going to be coming before you for a vote, is that you have not been granted the power to regulate the people's expression or private property by controlling the size or position of our yard signs. Similar to the way that the government has not been granted the power to limit the page numbers in a book, interfere with the distribution of campaign materials, or regulate informational pamphlets, the distribution of any kind of informational pamphlet. Article 1, Section 4 and 6 of the Illinois Constitution reserves to the people the right to, quote, speak, write, and publish freely, and the right to, quote, be secure in their possessions, houses, papers, and other possessions. The power to regulate these rights has not been granted to this council, and the securing of these rights is truly the foundation of honorable public service in America. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Please.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kenneth Knapp. I'm in Bristol Bay subdivision. Thank you very much for everything you guys do representing this community. We moved out here about 2 years ago from Hoffman Estates area, and absolutely love this area. With the new development that is going on there now, I know that they closed down, like they stopped in 2008, 2009 when the crash happened. And then you guys refinanced the bonds for that area. I know Chris and I think Ken, or I think you're the other alderman for the area.
Third ward.
Matt, yeah, third ward. So where is all this additional tax revenue going to be going? Because we're still going to be paying our special service assessment for the next 14 years. Every single one of the people that's there, including myself. But then all these new homes aren't going to pay it, as well as all these rental homes. So the townhomes that are rentals, which I did bring up in our last last conversation that you guys had with the approval of the new rezoning of the subdivision so that they can build those townhomes. And I brought up that he will probably do rentals. And you guys were, it was the first time anyone even heard of it. Well, ends up being rentals, it's gonna increase the tax revenue pretty much by double the amount. So where is that money going if they're not paying the tax assessments like we are? And we're gonna be continuing to pay it for 14 years. That's a lot of money when we are paying for that school, for the fire department, for the hookups, I mean, everything. You guys plan that out?
It's not a give and take. When you're done, I will make the comment. This is not a give and take session.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't do that. If you have questions,
yeah.
We can have staff try to reach out to you afterwards through email or whatever.
Okay.
But we don't do give and take here.
This is my first.
No, I'm just telling you. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be glad to talk to you afterwards if you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yes. Couple other things, I'll talk to you about
that
afterwards.
Okay, yeah, and just I'll say one thing. This is your first time. And again, this is not for a conversation, just to clarify.
Yeah.
The townhomes were approved in the master plan 20 years ago. This council did not approve that master plan. They were already approved. So.
But not as rentals.
The council approved the master plan 20 years ago as townhomes. So, did you have anything else you wanted to offer? Again, I'll have a conversation afterwards, but we're not going to go back and forth.
You can always contact your office, too.
You can pose
the
questions so we can hear the
questions. That's what he
hasn't
done, so.
Yeah.
We'll talk afterwards.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
I'll talk to you afterwards.
Yeah, that's fine. And yeah, we'll get you all the information we can.
Okay.
Yeah, we have no problem with it. Anyone else? There's no need for executive session. Is that correct? Did you say there is?
There is not.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy. Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Sorry. Vulture, Polk, I think. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.